News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to Hometown Heroes on this Saturday afternoon, coming to you from the Radio City today on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. In a few moments, I'll welcome in my guest this week. He's connected to our guest last week, so if you've been paying attention, maybe you have a clue on that. First, I want to let you know about an event that's coming up that I think that you might be interested in, especially if you're like our own Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride the motorcycle here and there. In 2 weeks, 2 weeks from today, on June 27th, starting at 9 o'clock in the morning from the U.S. Army National Guard Armory, there will be a charity motorcycle ride benefiting the families of National Guard members. And this is a great need in our area right now that they need help to provide for their families while they're serving our country. It's just $20 if you pre-register today to ride your bike in that motorcycle ride. And for more, maybe you have, and for more on that, first I want to let you know about that's coming up. Think that you're interested in it. If you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a cycle here and there. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. It's a great area right now that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today. Bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have on that. First, I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a motorcycle here and there. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. It's a great need area right that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have on that. First, I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a motorcycle here and there. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. It's a great need area right now that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have on that. First, I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a motorcycle here and there. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. It's a great need area right now that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you per today bike in that ride, and maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, who likes to ride a cycle. Here in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National members. It's a great area right now that, to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have on that. First, I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a motorcycle here in. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. It's a great need area right now that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have on that. First, I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you interested in it, especially if you're on Ray Appleton, someone who likes to ride a motorcycle here and there. In 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor. There will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. There's a great need area right now that they need to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today, bike in that ride. Maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. Especially if you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here at in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. There's a great new area right now that they have to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today, bike in that ride. Maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. Especially if you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here at in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor stand for there will be a stand for motorcycle stand for fitting the stand for national stand for members stand for a great stand for area right stand for that stand for to stand for their family stand for serving our country need and it's just need and always if you need and for today need and a bike in that need and a ride need and maybe you have need and on that need and so I want to let need and about need and it's coming up starting think that you starting interested in a starting if you're a starting on Ray Apple starting one who likes day starting ride a starting cycle day starting here at a starting in day starting 2 weeks from day starting on June the 7th. So it might be the 9th the morning that it might be U.S. Army about the guard armor. It might be there'll be a chat the motorcycle it might be fitting the fence up the national that it might be members about there's a great net this area right home to noon that from to provide videos their family come out new serving our country. It's just $10 if you put 80 there today and bike in that motorcycle ride. Maybe you have an account on that. So I want to let you know about two that's coming up. Think that you're interested in it. If you're on Ray Apple, the one who likes to rose, ride town cycle here in the minute in service 2 weeks from Wednesday on June 7th at 9 in the morning, downtown U.S. Army Guard armor. There will be a motorcycle benefiting the Ivy's National G-Bug members. EM's a great Ivy's area, right? G-Bug that EM to provide their family G-Bug serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today. Bike in that ride. Maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. If you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National Guard members. There's a great need area right that they have to provide their family serving our country. It's just $10 if you pre-order today and bike in that vehicle ride. Maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about men and women that's coming up. Service and think that you have interested in our free. If you're now on Ray Apple, the host, one who likes in town ride cycle Leffler. Here at in 2 weeks from on June 7th at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor. There will be a the home motorcycle rose benefiting the Saturday National Noon Cumbers from the great Nidios area, right? News that the 80 KM to Pro KM their family 80 died serving our country. And it's just $10 if you might be over today. The bike in that might be a ride. Maybe you have, you might be on that. That I still want to let you might be about the tent that's coming up. You might be, I think that you are interested in it. Might be a, if you're starting a on Ray App, starting a one who likes starting a ride, starting a cycle, starting a here is starting a in starting a 2 weeks from starting a on June starting a 7th starting at 9 starting in the morning need and U.S. Army need and guard army need and there will be a need and a motorcycle need and benefiting the need and national need and members need and there's a great need and area right need and that they and from to and from their family and from serving our country and from it's just and from always if you can from here today and from bike in that and from ride and from maybe you have and from on that and from just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. Especially if you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th, at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the national members. It's a great area, right, that they to provide their family serving our country. It's just always if you prefer today bike in that ride, maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. Actually, if you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army Guard Armor, there will be a motorcycle benefiting the National members. It's a great area, right, that they to provide their family serving our country. It's just always if you prefer today bike in that ride, maybe you have on that. Just I want to let you know about that's coming up. I think that you're interested in it. Actually, if you're on Ray Apple, one who likes to ride a cycle here in 2 weeks from today, on June 7th at 9 in the morning, U.S. Army.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes with you every Saturday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and online at KMJ580.com. Each week we visit with veterans of World War II. And why do we do that? Well, we first of all want to honor their service and their sacrifice for the sake of our freedom. We want to preserve their stories for posterity, to keep these stories alive, to remind the rest of us of what price was paid for the freedom that we enjoyed today. And hopefully along the way maybe inspire younger generations of Americans to live up to that legacy that's been left for us by members of the greatest generation. Next week, we're going to hear about a new book by a local World War II veteran. It's called Follow the Bouncing Ball, and Don Ball will join me next week. Last week, I was joined by Bob Angelich, and this week, it's his cousin, Lee Angelich. Maybe you know that name because of his great success as a high school basketball coach, a longtime educator here in the Valley, now a member of the Fresno Athletic Hall of Fame. But around about 1944 and 1945, it wasn't layups and free throws. It was Lady and Iwo, I guess, were a couple of the buzzwords in the Pacific. Lee Angelich serving on the USS Rixie, a casualty evacuation transport ship, and he told you some of what that ship did during World War II. Now we're going to hear about what he was doing on that ship. And Lee, you described for us some of the purposes of that ship, to pick up casualties from all these bloody invasions and transport them back to hospital ships where they could be treated. What were your specific duties, and was it pretty much the same day-to-day, or was every day something new that you'd never experienced before?
No, it was pretty much the same every day. I first went aboard as boat officer for the invasion of Guam with two other fellows, and we both had four boats that we were in charge of on the invasion. We would take the troops in and the debarkation line and drop them off and go back to the ship, and we were taxi cab service until we got them all off. Then after Guam, I was relieved as a boat officer and became regular ship's company aboard the ship. And then I became an officer of the deck, junior officer of the deck first. When I got qualified, you really took the ship over. And, of course, we did a lot of zigzagging and all, and we had to keep station with the ships in front of us and off to our sides. And so that was my main duty, as being officer of the deck. And then I was responsible. I had a master of arms force of about seven or eight men. And then when the troops would come aboard, we would board them. We would give them their billets, as we call it in the Navy. And we took 1,200 troops aboard until we got rid of them. And we had a personnel of 410 enlisted men aboard ship, and including the doctors and the rest of us, there was about 40 officers. So my duty really was organizing the trip, troops, get them on the ship, get them off the ship, and stand watch when it was my turn.
Now, and you mentioned taking over the ship. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I imagine in that position, you're at times able to outrank guys that in any other situation would be outranking you. as far as being in control of the ship. Did you ever have any fun with that, or did you ever have somebody who thought he should be telling you what to do and it was the other way around?
We had one older fellow that was a full lieutenant, and we were ensigns at the time, and the captain qualified us ahead of him, and he wasn't a happy camper. And the captain, he never does take over the ship unless you go into port, and when you leave port, it was just in the hands of the officer of the deck, and it took about 4 months to become qualified, or when he qualified, three of us. So, and you take, it's your ship. Somebody has to make all the zigs and the zags and do it right, or he'd set you down.
Well, and you're not alone floating in the ocean. You're surrounded by a pretty big flotilla of other ships. And I imagine if you're not zigging the right way, it could potentially be dangerous.
It was pretty dangerous one night. In fact, I was relieved at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's one of the shift changes for all the ships in the convoy. And we were to zig to the right. And the ship to our beam had to zig to the right. Instead, they zigged practically into us, and we just barely avoided a collision at sea. It took forever to straighten out the whole convoy. Of course, we heard the signals for collision. We thought it was general quarters, but it was a collision jingle where you have to go to your stations and be prepared for a collision, and it didn't happen, which made us all happy.
If it had happened, I'm sure both ships would be damaged pretty well.
Yeah, they would have been.
And what do you think would have happened to the guy who was responsible for zigging the wrong way?
The guy zigging the wrong way would have been court-martialed.
No doubt about it. Better him than you, for sure. You mentioned hearing that sound, and it sounded like general quarters. I'm always curious, and obviously guys in different areas of the war were at their battle stations more often than some others, but with you and where you were, was general quarters being sounded, was that a fairly common thing? Did you feel like you were always on alert or always had to be prepared to deal with that, or was it something that was more rare?
No, it wasn't rare. We were general quarters a lot of times, and if your turn was to be officer of the deck, the navigator would take over the helm. And then if your time ran out, and then you're free until your next watch. But everybody had a station to go to. Cooks and everybody, they had gun stations. Everybody went to their stations at general quarters time. And then one morning, I had to watch. And I'll never forget the time. It was 3:33 in the morning. And off the port bow, I could see a red ball, and the destroyer was shooting at a kamikaze. And it, somehow or another, he went beyond the destroyer and was headed our way. And, of course, the messenger real quickly went to wake the captain up. And the only thing you could say, this is not a drill. General quarters, man your stations. And only one person from our ship fired, and it was a young fellow, about 18, from Tennessee, Martin Cold. And he hit the pilot, and we had reports the kamikaze was within 15 feet of our ship. But the ship is always moving, and when I got to the station, my gun station, it looked like he was about 25 yards away. And so Martin Cole was sort of a happy guy after he shot down the kamikaze, hit the pilot. Everybody reached in their wallet and gave him a few dollars, so he got a real good tip.
And for our listeners at home who are trying to envision this and understand how significant that was, what would have happened if Martin Cole didn't hit that pilot?
Well, we don't know. That suicide plane kamikaze would have been right at our fantail.
Could have cost a lot of lives.
Could have cost a lot of lives. We had our sister ship hit, and it cost a few lives. In fact, we were supposed to take the duty, and we had personnel aboard, and they were empty at the time. They took our station duty instead, and they got hit, and they lost quite a few men. And in convoy, we had the ship right ahead of us hit, and it was 180 lives that were lost. And what do? You just keep going. Go right by the ship and just keep your fingers crossed. And we were lucky, Paul. We were sort of a charmed ship.
That kind of insinuates that you had more close calls than just a kamikaze that came within 15 feet. Any other you feel like sharing?
Well, there was a few. We saw the Cleveland hit a kamikaze just, it must have had a 5-inch shell, must have hit it just flush. Then we had on the invasion of Luzon in the Ligayen Gulf, the British had a 4-stack cruiser, and a kamikaze came through and left 2 stacks. So it just overshot the cruiser. And then I had a friend that I met over there that I was in midshipman school with. He came aboard with about 80 guys, and they were all pale, frightened, state of shock. And I asked him, what happened to you guys? You guys all seem to, you look okay, but why so sober? He said, our destroyer got sunk. We were picked up by another destroyer. It got sunk, and we spent quite a while in the water, and then now we're coming aboard your ship. So it gets pretty close to you.
Well, I imagine, especially as superstitious as some people are, when you guys heard that story, it made you wonder what was the destiny of your own ship, huh? Those guys had already been sunk twice.
No, we were lucky. A lot of that happened around us, and we were fortunate. And Okinawa was a good example of the kamikazes. They were just going wild then. I gave you a brochure, Paul, and I gave you one to give to Ray Appleton.
And I'm sure he'll enjoy it.
He'll enjoy it. Come atomic bomb time, August 5th, and then August 7th, I believe, the second one was dropped. At Okinawa, the kamikaze sunk over 30 naval ships and hit over 400. So when Truman found this out, and then we were going to invade the island of Japan on November 1st of 1945, and the atomic bombs prevented this, and that's when it became unconditional surrender. They finally gave up, but they were ready. They were waiting for us. That would have been a tough invasion to make.
And I want to talk to you more about that in a few moments. But before we get to the commercial, I want to get a clear picture of what it was like. And you described your duties, but I'm sure that you are coming face to face with some of the real brutality of war as far as the injuries and the state that some of these guys are coming back in. And I don't even know, as far as the casualties on your ship, how many of the guys being brought aboard were still living, how many dead bodies you're evacuating, if you can give us a sense of that. And then what's it like to be staring at all of these guys who you know were able-bodied just like you and about the same age as you just hours or days beforehand?
You know what it was, Paul? I stayed away from sick bay. I didn't have to go down there. And we had great doctors and corpsmen and pharmacist mates. They did really a yeoman's job. And the thing that really got to you is when these ships were hit by kamikazes and they were set afire, and we took those casualties, and they had skin burns, flash burns. And then the air-conditioned system aboard ship would take that smell throughout the ship. And I remember that smell for a good 1 or 2 years. It wasn't nice. And we had one Army fellow that he was supposed to be below decks, and we were firing, and other ships were firing at planes, and a shrapnel came on our ship and hit him above the eye. That's the only casualty we had aboard our ship, and he had no business on topside.
Well, I'm sure he wasn't back up topside anytime.
No, that did it for him. He stayed below from then on.
Did you ever, you talked about the smell of those burn victims and how that stuck with you, and I'm sure you can still envision some of what you saw. Did you ever look at somebody, or maybe like your friend there who got hit, and you think about, or you see a kamikaze that's decimated another ship, you know how close they've come to your ship. Did you ever pause and think, you know, that could easily be me?
Yeah, that's true, Paul. You get awful quiet. Nobody talks. You figure, well, it could be our turn next, and you had to be lucky, which we were. So I think at Okinawa, every 3 days, two U.S. ships were hit by kamikazes. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it became.
And it could have been a lot worse after that, as we're going to talk about when we come back. We'll take another break here. Back with more from Lee Angelich. It's Hometown Heroes this afternoon. News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you are listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We continue with Lee Angelich, Navy veteran of World War II. We've heard about some of his experiences. And, you know, every week on this program, we get into a lot of what-ifs. What if a veteran was here and not there? It could be a matter of inches, a matter of feet, a matter of time. And we often think about that and talk about that. And also, what if that veteran didn't make it home from the war? How many kids and grandkids wouldn't be here? In this case, how many young basketball players or track stars would have had their careers go differently without Lee Angelich's Hall of Fame coaching skills to benefit them? And I don't know if I get the sense that's not what you're most proud of, although you are very proud of that. But let's talk about some other small world connections when we think about that. And you think about World War II, and there are 16 million Americans who are serving here and there. About half of them were from your extended family, from what I understand.
That's true.
Cousins here and there.
We had quite a few.
But you get the sense, even though, and you're surrounded by all these ships, dozens of ships in the ocean, you look out, and no matter which direction you look, there's another ship full of hundreds of servicemen. And in the midst of all of that, you still end up with some small world situations where you bump into someone that you have a connection to or someone that you know does. I understand that you had one of those situations aboard your ship when you were called out to pick up a pilot who had been shot down.
Yeah, he was shot down. He was parachuting. It was off of Guam, I believe. And then our ship got word to go pick the pilot up. And so when anybody comes aboard, you have to log his rank, name, whatever, and time he came aboard and all. And I happen to have the officer of the deck watch, and he comes aboard, tells him his first name. The last name was Tholey. I said, Tholey. I said, you know, you have any relatives named Tholey? He said, yes, I have a cousin, Bob Tholey. I said, well, he's my roommate. So that was quite a reunion.
What are the chances of that?
Oh, that's like hitting the lotto there, Paul.
Uh-huh. So I'm sure that you took care of business and
reacquainted
the cousins with each
other. Oh, yeah. He stayed aboard ship for a few days, and then he got sent back to the States. And then, Paul, the invasion of Japan, they would have held out. But Iwo Jima was taken for the small airstrip there.
Right.
And they were bombing Japan 24 hours a day, and they just wouldn't quit. They wouldn't give up. They dropped leaflets and everything else, but they were holding on, and they had a lot of suicide planes ready. And they were coming after their transports. You can't land the troops. You got no one to fight for you. So actually, it was a blessing that the invasion never did materialized, because I think it was documented in the Army report I gave you and the Navy report that we would have lost over 1 million casualties. We would have had over 1 million casualties, and I don't know how many Japanese would have been killed also, but it would have been a huge amount.
It certainly would have cost millions of lives when you take both sides together. And let's put that in perspective, because we talk about this, and I just mentioned a figure a few moments ago. There were 16 million Americans serving in World War II. Obviously, if the war had been extended, there would have been more Americans that ended up in the service, and many of whom would have been sent to Japan, as you are convinced you would have been, right? There was no question.
Well, I knew where we were going. We were going to Operation Olympic. And that was going to happen November 1st, 45. I knew that. I was a troop officer, and I was told not to speak too much about that to anyone aboard ship. But that was our operation, Operation Olympic, and that was going to be the first major operation. And when they invade an island, they don't hit one beach. You got about three or four different groups. They're all going ashore.
Well, and you think about that, and I imagine that had to be something, well, in retrospect, certainly you can see how significant it would have been. And I know that you're convinced you wouldn't be here talking to me today if you had been part of that invasion of Japan. Was that something that you realized at the time? Did you say, wait, we're invading Japan? I'm not going to be here much longer.
Well, yeah, we were getting a little antsy about that time. We were hoping not to go to that particular island. And, in fact, Paul, what happened, we were assigned 250 to come aboard our ship, yet we could take 1,200. It was a numbers game. The ship behind us could take, say, 1,800. They were assigned 350. We had to get ships ashore. You couldn't put all your eggs in one basket. A normal operation, we'd have a full house of 1,200. The bigger APAs, troop ships would have 1,800 to 2,000. And we're all cutting down in size to get men ashore to fight the Japanese.
Now, and you mentioned this this document that you passed on to me that details a lot of the plans that the Allies had for invading Japan. President Truman actually approved those plans in late July, about 2 weeks before the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. Of course, those two bombs eventually preempted the need for invading Japan, but the military estimates at this time, and it was the chief of intelligence under General MacArthur, Charles Willoughby, who estimated that American casualties from that entire operation invading Japan would reach 1 million in just a year. By the fall of 1946, they thought 1 million Americans would have been killed in the process of invading Japan. So that is more than double the amount of Americans killed in the entire war, 400,000 in all the theaters put together, and it would have more than doubled that, more than tripled it, if that had actually happened. So we're talking to one of the lives that was saved by that decision that President Truman made, and I'm continually amazed when I read and study that, that he didn't even know there was a bomb until FDR died. He was the Vice President of the United States and had no idea that that was in their arsenal. And they say, well, now you're president, and by the way, you have the power to change world history with this weapon that no one's seen before. And then just months later, he ends up using it.
I'll tell you how happy the men were aboard our ship when the Japanese called it quits and we got word that they did. I had to watch that evening from 8 to 12 o'clock. You send the messenger out about 3:30 to get your relief, and the messenger came up to me. He said, Mr. Anchelich, he said, your relief is in no condition to stand watch. There was a few bottles of liquor around, and so everybody became pretty happy. I said, well, I'll stand his watch until 4 in the morning, and then we'll see what happens. Try to get the next guy up, same thing happened. So I stayed on watch from 8 at night to 8 in the morning. I think I was the only sober officer aboard ship.
The only one not absolutely going overboard in celebrating that great day in August of 1945. Now, I know there was a lot of celebration that day, and that sticks in the mind just of so many veterans. But what about when you made it home? How long was it until you got back to the States? And was that an emotional thing for you to see America again?
Oh, yes, it was. I was fairly lucky. The Navy started to water down the personnel on every ship. So I was, I got off at Oahu, and I got reassigned, and I had the best duty station in Hawaii. I was an executive officer to a naval rest officer's camp, and the officers would come out there for R&R. And the seamen also had a camp for R&R. So, of course, everybody was going home. So I had to put they went out of commission, the camp we were at. And then I finally got back to the States. But we had a great camp. There were tennis courts, pool tables, a movie every night, slot machines, and so forth. So, anyway, we kept them all happy right there. And we had about 60 men there. They just served the officers. And like I mentioned, the enlisted men also had the same type of facilities on a different end of the island.
And when you got home and saw your family again, was that something where folks were pretty happy to see you?
It was pretty happy. It was pretty happy days. I think, like Bob said last week, we lost a first cousin opening day at Pearl Harbor. In fact, he used to pitch for the Sacramento AAA team, and they found out about it over there. He was at Hickam Field, and he was supposed to go to Schofield and pitch baseball that afternoon. Mm-hmm. Well, 7 o'clock in the morning rolled around on the 7th. He didn't make it. Then on my mother's side in Vietnam, I had a first cousin that got killed, and he was a major. He made major the day he got killed. Mm. And Paul, you can't imagine what makes these guys move and what they believe in. He was a Marine. He had a chance to go home. He says, "No, I was targeted to be a trainer for men, and I'm going back to Vietnam." He didn't have to go back.
I get the sense when you describe those people and him and your cousin who was killed at Pearl Harbor that that you have a feeling that if people want to talk about heroes, those are the names that you're going to throw at them.
Yeah, they're the heroes. No, we were just aboard ship. We were dropping off heroes and taking heroes back from the battlefield.
I talked to your cousin Bob about this last week with regard to your other cousin who was killed at Pearl Harbor, as you talked about. Is that something that entered your mind or was ever on your mind when you were serving in the war that not necessarily there was vengeance, but because he had already paid part of your freedom with his life, that you owed it to him and his legacy to keep fighting? Was that a motivating factor at all?
It was a motivating factor down deep. It was always there and still is.
I sense that as you speak about it. I'll tell you what, I think that's a good spot for our last little commercial break. When we come back, we'll come down the home stretch with Lee Angelich, talk about some more of his memories from his time in World War II and maybe some of the lessons that he applied from that in the rest of his life. This is Hometown Heroes, and it's News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Just a few minutes left with Coach Lee Angelich, our guest today on Hometown Heroes. Last year, you heard from his cousin Bob. They both talked about another cousin of theirs who was killed at Pearl Harbor, how that was a motivating factor. And I did say Coach Lee Angelich. He was a Hall of Fame basketball coach, inducted in the Fresno Athletic Hall of Fame last year for his great success as a high school coach. Fresno High was the final stop of his coaching career and was there when there were some pretty good athletes at that school in the late 1950s. And I don't know about you, but if you ever had a coach who was from the military, there was a little intimidation factor. I had a junior high basketball coach who had been a Marine and a tough one at that, and I still have some good memories. Did you ever translate any of what you picked up in the military and some of that chain of command stuff to your work as a very successful coach?
Oh, I think so, Paul. I think if you went in military and you went in and came out as healthy as you went in and you came out, it was a great blessing and a great education. It was probably worth at least 2 years of college.
You kind of had no choice but to grow up pretty fast, didn't you?
You grew up in a hurry. You had no choice.
So you tried to take a little bit of that and pass it on to your students. I imagine they didn't quite have as much motivation for getting in ship shape right away as you had in the Navy.
No, in the Navy, you stayed in condition. You had no choice.
Now, you mentioned something earlier, and everyone has heard about General MacArthur, and they associate that quote, "I shall return." And, of course, he did wade back ashore at Leyte. And you were there that day. You said about 1,000 yards away from his ship, the Nashville?
Correct.
And I know on every one of these ships, you have the glasses you can look through and get a little closer view. Did you guys take turns trying to catch a glimpse of Dugout Doug coming back ashore?
Yeah, we had a rangefinder. We all took turns of watching him board the landing craft boat to go ashore. In fact, we had people on our ship from the Time magazine, Look magazine, some British correspondents. And they all went ashore with him, took the pictures and so forth, him waiting ashore. But the Army personnel, the ones that had the nickname for him, Dugout Doug. First, we were in contact with General MacArthur very much.
Yeah, he was in his own world, and some say that's a good thing, some say otherwise. But I've heard a lot of wonderful stories, and we have so many really lasting items from him, things that he has said and things that stick with us today. But you were there for a famous moment in history that day, and I got a little bit of a taste of it. What else did you get a taste of in the military? What stuck with you the most? Maybe when you look back, obviously you're most thankful for being here, and there are a few other people that are thankful for that. I'm sure your three daughters and your dozen grandchildren and dozen more great-grandchildren are pretty thankful you came back from World War II. Anything else that you picked up in your time from the service that you really felt like impacted your life and gave you a good foundation for what you've done since?
Well, you found out there was a lot of great people, and a lot of them were in all the services. And everybody was in one package. Everybody was willing to go and do their job and hopefully come back safe. The Navy, Army, and all military just was a great, it was a great education. And Paul, before I forget, the workhorse of the Navy was the U.S. destroyers. And I would say the number one ship were the aircraft carriers. But you had to take your hat off to the guys on the destroyers. And the aircraft carriers are the ones that really caught hell.
They saw a lot of very tough stuff, no doubt about that. And we've heard some of those stories here on this program. Another thing that I want to ask you about, we have just a couple minutes left. I'm a big basketball nut. I play a couple times a week, and I call basketball games on the radio. And I wasn't around in the 50s when you were coaching. And I'm sure there are some parallels. Dealing with a dozen or 15 guys is a lot easier than trying to orchestrate 16 million troops during the war. But I'm sure some of that carried over. But you had a chance beyond high school ball to coach a national team in an international competition. You coached the Libyan national team?
Yeah, I went over and selected the national team of Libya, and I took them to the North African Games in Tunis. And I was over there for a good 3.5 months, and then shortly afterwards I got assigned to go to Yugoslavia. And their season was over, but I conducted seminars with their coaches. And that was a great experience. And Tito was a communistic dictator at the time. And I told the story once before. Every hotel I went to, there was always somebody watching me. I imagine my room was even bugged. And the guy, he let it be known who he was, because every time I saw the guy in Zagreb or Titograd or wherever I was at, he always wore the same green suit. So I knew who he was. And I'm sure he was watching me. He said, "What in the world is this guy doing over here coaching basketball?" So that was a good experience.
Keep your eyes on that American basketball coach.
And then I gave my wife and I an opportunity to visit all our relatives, being our parents were born in Yugoslavia.
Well, that's pretty special. And that was in the early 1960s, huh?
Yeah, 61.
Uh-huh. What a treat. And I'm sure there are a lot more stories there that we could touch on. Unfortunately, we're running short on time here. Just a little more than a minute left in the program. Anything that I haven't asked you about that you think people ought to know? When you talk to your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids about World War II, is there one thing that you hope they understand about what it was all about and why guys like you did what you did?
I don't think so. They live in their own little world. They probably know more from our little session here and than they do from, being under the same roof. They got their own little surroundings and friends and so forth. And I think a lot of this stuff, they probably don't believe that I went through it.
Well, I believe you.
Oh, thanks, Paul.
For what it's worth. And I think those are all true stories, and it's great to hear them, as we do every week. And if you think of anything down the road, you can let me know. It's been a great privilege to visit this hour with Lee Angelich, not only a Hall of Fame basketball coach, but a World War II veteran. And Lee, thank you for your service to our country and your service to our valley and all the years since.
Well, thank you, Paul. This has been a privilege.
All right. It's been a lot of fun, and we look forward to another conversation next week with a World War II veteran. Don Ball of Cathy's Valley will join me. He served in the U.S. Army Air Corps during World War II, was a radio man and gunner on a B-17, and had some pretty close calls of his own. He's even written a book about it called Follow the Bouncing Ball. So that'll be the topic of our program next week. Remember, if there's a veteran in your life that you'd like to tell me about, if you know another one of the Angelich cousins that you think I ought to have on the show, send me an email, paul@kmjnow.com, and I'll get right on it. That is our program for today. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next weekend for another edition of Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.